Now let us hear the word of God, verses from the first chapter of the book of the prophet Micah, and also verses from the sixth chapter. The word of the Lord that came to Micah, the Morashtite, in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, which he saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem. Hear, you people, every one of you. Listen, O earth, and all that is therein. And let the Lord be a witness against you, even the Lord from his holy mountain. For behold, the Lord comes from out of his place, and will come down and tread upon the high places of the earth. And the eighth verse. For this will I lament and wail. I will go stripped and naked, and here the I is really Judah. I will make a wailing like the jackals, and a lamentation like the ostriches make. Bad word. For her wounds are incurable, for it has come even nigh unto Judah. And it reaches even to the gates of my people who live in Jerusalem. And so tell it not in Gath, gossip town. Tell it not in gossip town. Weep not at all in Beth-Lehava. I have rolled myself in the dust. Pass away, O inhabitants of Sophia, in nakedness. Sophia means dressy town, you know. This is a play on words, a pun that Micah is really making. Don't tell a word of it in Gath, where people usually gossip. Don't you weep at all in weeping town. Dressy town is going to flee naked. The inhabitants of Zanon is not come forth. The wailing of Bethesel shall take you from its fortress. And then down in the 13th verse, bind the chariot to the swift steed, O you inhabitants of Lachish. Woe to them that devise iniquity and work evil upon their beds. And when the morning comes, they practice their evil, because it is in the power of their hand so to do. And then over in the sixth chapter, where God is appealing to Judah. All my people, what have I done to you? And in what way have I wearied you to make you treat me so? Tell me. For I brought you up out of the land of Egypt, redeemed you out of the house of bondage. And I sent before thee Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. And then the sixth verse. How really shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God the Most High? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with year-old calves? Will the Lord be pleased if I offer thousands of rams or tens of thousands of rivers of oil? Will he be pleased if I even give my firstborn as a sacrifice for my sin, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? Pause. He hath showed thee, O man, what is really needed. And what does the Lord require of thee but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God? And may God bless to our hearts the reading and the hearing of this portion of his word. 6 or 7 years ago, when I was in Palestine digging in the hot sun on the top of Lachish, the mound, I could not help but note from day to day as I dug there in the hot sun, this calm, cool-looking valley down toward the south from me. And yet I could tell that there was a tail there, that is a hill, a mountain. Some city used to be there. But I had not brushed up on my geography of Palestine, and so I asked Dr. Yohanan Aharoni, the chief archaeologist. I said, Yohanan, what is that tail down there? It looks like I could throw a brick down there and hit it. He said, well, you could almost do so. It's about 3 miles from here. He says, that's the tail, Moresheth Gath. It's where Micah was born and where he did his ministry. I thought of that many times, that cool, calm-looking little valley there, just a few miles away from where I was working in the hot sun, the place where this prophet, Micah, whose book we are thinking about briefly this morning, where he lived and ministered. Micah was a younger contemporary of Isaiah. He sounds much like Amos, more like Amos than like Isaiah. Isaiah was the statesman prophet, and he used calm, dignified, lofty, majestic language. Micah, like Amos, uses a few words that are very hard and rough and rugged. Now, this prophet Micah lived close enough to Samaria to observe the spiritual shenanigans going on up there, and close enough to Jerusalem to observe the crookedness of the leaders of God's people, the church, Judah, in Jerusalem. And he was greatly moved by what he saw, much the same way in which Amos was moved, and also Isaiah. These prophets all had one motive and one theme. But here is Micah. The word, by the way, means who is like the Lord, Micaiah. Who is like the Lord? And Micah grew greatly disturbed over what he saw. Now, I remind you, he was not greatly disturbed at what the heathen were doing, the Assyrians and the others. He was not at all concerned about that, except in a most indirect way. But he was concerned with the behavior of God's people, God's covenant people, who had obligated themselves to do better and who knew better. He was concerned to see that in Jerusalem, a number of wealthy people were stripping the poor people of their property and their possessions and their rights, their privileges. But of course, it's the same old story. The world has not really changed very much. But this kind of thing got next to Micah. And as he mused about it, under the working of the Holy Spirit, he became led to say something about it to the people. And he does. He reminds them first of their obligation, of who they are and what they should do. How often the prophets do this? Don't you know that God brought you up out of Egypt and has set you up in the land? But notice how Micah puts these words in God's mouth, if you please, in the mouth of the Lord. And actually, when you read the book, you almost think you're in a courtroom, because he uses courtroom terminology and courtroom procedure. He talks about the witnesses, about the charge against this person or that person. And so he pictures Israel, God's people, being in the courtroom as the culprit. And God now is on the lofty mountain, the judge on the throne. And he says, why have you done this thing? What right do you have to live in such a way when you are under obligation to do better? You know my law. Tell me, what is it that I've done to you? Says God to the people. Testify, if you can. And of course, Israel is silent. Can't say a word. Because they knew, but would not do. And so therefore, Micah now pictures what every other prophet pictures in a slightly different way. Judgment is coming. And as I had occasion to remind us in the Sunday school class this morning, God's judgment come axiomatically, automatically, without his having to push a button or to call a meeting. Because there is this built-in spiritual rebound. The individual who renounces God's law is going to be in trouble, whether he likes it or not. Even God can't stop it. Because that's the way it works. And moreover, the nation that flouts God's covenant law is going to be in trouble. And Micah recognizes this, and he pictures in most dramatic style the armies of the invader, the oppressor, coming down from the north. And he mentions these various cities, Gath, Beth Lahava, these various individual cities. And he, because he's something of a literary genius, and he was, he makes a play on words. You people in Gath, where you gossip all the time, the time soon coming when you won't be able to gossip about anything because the enemy is going to lay you flat as a pancake. And you people in Dressetown, and he uses the Hebrew word, which is the name of the town, why, you're going to flee naked as a jaybird when these oppressing armies come. That's an awful picture. And he pictures the forces coming nearer and nearer to Jerusalem. Judgment is coming. Now, my friends, with this in mind, Micah uses a word which also is used by Habakkuk, the prophet, one of those prophets, minor prophets, just a very short prophecy. Habakkuk and Micah both use a word which was the key word of what we know as the Reformation. Right standing with God. Righteousness. The man who is in right standing with God by faith, that's the man who is going to really live. And so Micah uses really the same word. And in the New Testament it is dikaiosune, right standing with God. And so the prophet, in a very subtle yet obvious way, reminds Judah, God has a right to expect you to do better because by your faith in him, you claim to be in right standing with him. So therefore, if you are in right standing with him, certain things must follow. You must do certain things. What must follow? Well, instead of taking advantage of the poor, you should have mercy on him and do good to him. Instead of your worship being formal, ritualistic, by rote, it should be a matter of the heart. And Micah, exactly like Amos, and also like the first few chapters of Isaiah, shows God's dissatisfaction, his hatred of formal worship. Who gave you the right to come into my courts, even with all of your paraphernalia of worship, when your heart is far from me? What right do you have to come and make solemn prayers, hoping for the time for the next day to come where you can get busy about your dishonesty with other people? Who gave you the right to do this? The fact that you claim to be in right standing with me should enable you by my grace to let your walk tarry with your talk. This business of coming before the courts of God with nice-sounding prayers, but with no real heart in it, reminds me of a personal experience that happened to me years ago when I was the so-called organist of a church. I won't tell you what denomination it was. It wasn't Presbyterian. But I was trying to be a faithful organist. And at the communion service, when the minister was praying a very solemn prayer about coming to the communion table with penitent hearts and being in love and charity with your neighbor, I was supposed to keep the organ properly stopped, I mean, right stops to pull out, and I couldn't possibly pay attention to the prayer spiritually. I think I was excused for that. But I was trying to arrange the organ right, and I looked around, and there was my choir, saying those words, but all looking around, seeing the hats and the coats and all, but saying those prayers, every word, they had the right words, and they sounded good. Oh, my, what a pretty hat Jane got. I wonder what we're going to have for dinner today. That kind of thing going on while the prayer was going. It's not anything new. But this kind of double talk prevailed in Micah's day. And the prophet is trying to show that it is an ungodly thing, and God hates it. He hath showed thee what is right. You know what is right. Then do it. Now, just in closing, to get right down to brass tacks, we too know what is right. And I give you my word, I am not for a moment in a position to, nor do I have the disposition to sit in judgment on the motives or the actions of anybody. But this is, please believe me, what I believe to be the prophet's word to a people centuries ago, a word which is just as relevant today. My friends, too often we tend to let our own personal feelings and desires and wishes and likes and plans. Too often we are perfectly willing to let those things take precedent over what we know to be better. Now I say this to you not to hurt you, because as God is my witness, I love you. But we are God's people by our own statement. We belong to Him. Now I'm not talking about the fact that in the summer months, June, July, and August, that people find their way almost automatically to the beach and to the mountains and to the goodness knows where, because I'm going to find my way somewhere or other after a while, maybe. But, and this is not, I'm not talking about people going on vacation. I know that you have to go and you have to go and you have to go, and I'm not talking about vacation. I am talking about the rank and file of our Christian living has somehow or other got to be entirely under the Lordship of Christ, so that our wills are yielded and subject to what we know to be His will. We ought to do this. This involves attending church services. It involves our giving. It involves our witnessing. It involves how faithfully we take advantage of opportunities to help others that we know to be in need of some kind word or some little deed of attention or love. And just dozens of ways in which so often we know better but do not do better. And if we're going to take seriously what the prophet is saying, then my plea, and I speak to myself as well as to you, is that we ask God for grace, having, or rather, the wrong word, knowing what we should do. Beg him for grace and courage and faith to do it. But you see, this is hard to do because it tramples on our own wills, our own plans, our own likes, our own lives. And we are human enough simply to resent that kind of thing. But God's people have got to be different. That's what I'm trying to say. Somehow we've got to be different. And this is, in closing, the meaning of the very word church that we claim to be a member of. God's called out people who belong to Him, and we therefore should act as His unique people. And God give us the grace, even during these summer months when it's mighty easy, to be a little wee bit careless about obligations concerning the church. God help us to say, well now, Father, you bless me not only on December 1st, but on August 1st. And give me the grace and the courage to be faithful to Thee, not only in December, but always. He hath showed thee, O man, and the word for show means to make clear. He hath made it very clear what the Lord really requires, to do justly. That is, to act as people in right standing with God, to act as God's people, to love mercy, and to walk with God.